Rochester is thrown from his horse.
Are you injured, sir?
Get away from me, you witch.
What did you think of Master?
He is very changeable.
You do not know what it is to feel jealousy, do you, Jaina? So you have no idea what it is to love. I took the wrong path. I must bear the blame for continuing on it.
Jane finds Rochester asleep in a burning bed. BBC. Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Screenplay by Sandy Welsh. Starring Ruth Wilson, Toby Stevens, Francesca Annis, Lorraine Ashbourne, Christina Cole, Pam Ferris, Aidan McArdle, Anne Reid. Directed by Susanna White.
Sir! Mr. Rochester, sir, wake up!
Jane fetches a jug of water, throws it over Rochester, and he wakes up.
For heaven's sake, sir, wake up!
He's drowsy for a moment, but then his desperate situation sinks in. He pulls the curtains from the window and tries to smother the flames, whilst Jane douses them with water. Together, their combination of techniques finally puts out the fire. As they catch their breath, they both look round at the remains of the bed.
Jenny, you hurt?
No, sir. But you nearly killed in your bed.
What happened here?
I don't know. I heard a noise and I followed it here. Should I fetch Mrs. Fairfax?
No. What can she do?
I must fetch someone to help, sir.
No.
He picks up his robe and wraps it around her shoulders.
Sit, Jane. Quietly. Wait here for me. Can you do that?
She nods. He takes his leave, picking up a candle as he goes. After he's gone, Jane takes a moment to look around his dimly lit bedroom. She slowly gets to her feet and pulls the robe tightly around herself. At the window, she sees the light from a candle moving up the stairs of the North Tower. She takes a step closer to the window as the movement continues. Sometime later, Jane wakes in the armchair by the fire, disturbed by Rochester coming back in. He puts down the candle and paces in front of the fire.
It's settled. It's as I thought.
How so?
I forgot. Did you say you saw anything? Anyone?
No, I heard a laugh. I think it was Grace Poole, sir.
Of course. You're right. She's a singular sort of person. She's often careless and accidents happen. We'll say no more about it. Go back to your room. Servants will be up in an hour or two.
Jane gets up, takes off his robe, then makes for the door.
What, are you going without saying goodnight? Jane, you just saved my life. You might at least shake hands.
She offers her hand, which he takes in both of his.
I knew you'd do me good the first time I met you. I knew I wouldn't mind being in your debt.
There is no debt, sir. is no debt, sir. I'm glad I happened to be awake.
She saves me from an inferno, and she's glad she happened to be awake. Still, she tries to go.
I'm cold, sir.
Of course.
He wraps his robe around her again.
And we agreed that you'd never be cold again.
In silhouette, their faces are inches apart.
Well, if you must leave me, you must.
A little later, Jane returns to her own room and shuts the door behind her. She leans back against it and smiles a little as she puts down her candle. Bathed in silvery light, she hurries into bed and looks down at her hands. She studies the one that Rochester was holding and presses it to her lips. She looks upwards, then, still smiling, lies back and rests her head on the pillow. In his room, Rochester paces to the window and looks across at the lit room in the North Tower. He wearily rubs his face with his hand. The next morning, Jane's walking across the hallway. Rounding a corner, she finds Pilot sitting outside the door of Rochester's study. Passing a mirror, she catches sight of her own reflection and stops. She takes in her pale, open face, then her fingers drift up to her lips.
It's a mystery I wasn't burnt in his bed.
He will read with a candle burning. I told him how dangerous that is. Morning, dear.
Morning.
Morning, miss.
Morning, Grace. What has happened here?
Master was reading in bed again. Fortunately, he woke up and no real harm was done.
Jane steps closer to Grace, who's sewing.
That's very strange. Did no one hear anything?
Mrs. Fairfax said she heard nothing. She sleeps heavily. You're young, miss. Maybe you heard a noise.
I did. First I thought it was Pilot, but Pilot cannot laugh, and I'm certain I heard a laugh. A strange one.
Well, hardly likely the master would laugh, not when he was in such danger. I think you must have been dreaming, miss.
I most certainly was not dreaming.
Did you open your door? Did you see who or what it was you thought laughed?
On the contrary, I locked my door.
Very wise. It would be wise to lock your door the moment you go to bed. Who knows what might happen?
Looking slightly alarmed, Jane takes her leave. Grace ponders for a moment, then returns to her needlework. Later, Mrs. Fairfax notices Jane picking at her food.
You're not eating again. You ate very little at lunchtime, Miss Eyre. I hope you're not sickening. You're very flushed.
I'm very well, thank you. Never better.
Oh, it's a fine night. On the whole, a very good day for Mr. Rochester's journey.
Journey? I didn't know he was going out.
Oh, he set off right after breakfast. He's gone to Mr. Eshton's place over the other side of Millcote. He'll likely stay a fortnight or more at the house party.
A fortnight?
Yes. I told you he's hardly ever here for more than a few days. And you can't say he hasn't been starved of company these last 2 months. Oh, I mean, you know, fine and proper company, of course, my dear. When these fashionable, beautiful people get together, they're in no hurry to separate. Single gentlemen are especially sought after. And Mr. Rochester is so talented in society. The ladies are very fond of him. He's a very fine singer.
He sings?
Oh, yes. He and Miss Blanche Ingram sang at a Christmas party here some years ago.
Is Miss Ingram, is she very beautiful?
Oh, good Lord, yes. She has very fine features. Brilliant eyes. Very striking. Well, she was the belle of the county.
She's not yet married?
No. The Ingrams' estate will pass to the son. The daughters have only small fortunes.
But if she's so very beautiful, she must have wealthy suitors. Mr. Rochester, for example.
Well, yes, but there's a considerable difference in age.
What of it? There are more unequal matches made every day.
Why, yes, dear, but I scarcely think Mr. Rochester would think that a good idea. You've eaten nothing again. I'm sure you're sickening for something and the master's away. I must decide whether to send for Dr. Crawford.
I'm perfectly well, as I said. Never better.
Later, Jane's looking at her reflection when she hears Grace's voice in her head.
Are you sure you weren't mistaken, Miss Eyre?
You were mistaken, Jane Eyre.
She turns away from her reflection, stands up and fetches a piece of artist's canvas. Then she sits back down in front of the mirror and begins to sketch. Her eyes flicker between her reflection and the sketch. Time passes and her work nears completion. In simple charcoal, her sketch seems plain and unflattering. Sometime later, she's sitting in front of an easel, finishing a watercolour painting. When laid next to one another, the painting of a beautiful young woman makes a stark contrast to the sketch of herself.
Miss Blanche Ingram is the most beautiful and accomplished young lady. She is right and proper company for the master.
Now, Jane is outside writing a letter, seeking a position as a governess. Adele and Sophie pirouette across the lawn in front of her.
Who are you writing to, Miss Eyre? I thought you had no one to write to.
I don't.
We are your family now. I wish Mr. Rochester would come back. I am so bored.
I wouldn't wish for long. Sometimes he leaves us for many a month, especially in the cold winter season. Once, he left us for a whole year and a quarter. Oh, that was a very long winter. I can remember it well.
Sometime later, Jane is walking through the grounds close to a stone bridge. She looks up to the top of the North Tower and sees Grace folding some laundry. Their eyes meet for a fleeting moment in an expressionless stare. The next morning, Jane and Adele are eating breakfast when Mrs. Fairfax brings in the post. Jane spots Rochester's seal on a letter and surreptitiously pulls it out to make it more prominent.
Miss Eyre, are you sick? Your cheeks are pink.
It's very hot in here this morning, Adele.
Oh, from the master.
Mrs. Fairfax fumbles for her reading glasses and then puts them on. As Jane looks on expectantly, she opens the letter.
Wow.
Jane can barely contain herself as Mrs. Fairfax scans through the letter.
Well,
Mr. Rochester is not likely to return home soon.
He's returning, all right. Leah, come quickly!
Later, the hall is a hive of activity.
Locked over here, please. Dear Miss Grace, upstairs. You passed.
Would you good.
Let me help you.
Nice display in the centre there. Thank you. Oh,
the kitchen is in a similar state, as a wide variety of food is prepared.
Show you where we can. Are you sure all this is necessary?
Oh, yes, I think so. Well, we're not sure how many house guests is bringing, but we must be sure to have more than enough to feed them. Oh dear, I've never done this before. But the master's never been home long enough to have a party. Goose eggs.
As Jane fetches the basket of eggs, she spots Grace, then hears Leah talking with another maid.
Mrs. Paul gets good wages, I suppose.
Yeah, about 5 times what I get. Master's not stingy.
I wonder.
They realise Jane is listening and she walks away. Now, some distance from the house, Jane's sitting under a tree, carefully sketching a branch. At the sound of horses' hooves, she looks up. In the distance, a horse and rider appear in view over the brow of a hill. A young woman in a resplendent purple riding outfit brings her magnificent white horse to a halt. She's closely followed by Rochester on his steed.
I'll race you over to the river.
Jane frowns as Rochester and the woman ride off. At the house, Mrs. Fairfax sees a carriage arrive.
Oh, there they are at last.
Jean and Adele go to the window excitedly.
Let's go down and greet them.
That is Mademoiselle Ingram. She has a French name, Blanche, and that is her sister. I think it must be. And that's Lady Ingram, her mother.
Later, Adele and Jane peer out through a half-open door as two young women in evening gowns sweep by. Adele looks on in wide-eyed wonder as two more women in beautiful dresses share a joke. Jane looks melancholic as the sophisticated guests walk by. Now Jane and Adele are sitting at the top of the stairs, peering over the balcony at the party going on below. Adele lets her sleepy head rest on the balustrade, while Jane watches Blanche and Rochester in conversation. The next morning, Jane and Adele are eating breakfast.
Master says you may join the ladies this evening.
Well, I must start to prepare at once. I must wear absolutely my best dress.
Adele, you think too much of your appearance. It's the person inside you that matters. No one will love you for how pretty you are.
I do not think that can be right, Monsieur.
You must take her into the drawing room before the guests have finished dinner.
Oh, no, surely I don't have to be there. Adele can go with Sophie.
Master's orders. He said you must be there or he will come to your room and bring you down himself.
Later, Jane and Adele, who's dressed in a flamboyant yellow dress, go into the splendidly decorated drawing room. Adele dances through the room excitedly.
Des bonbons.
Adele, come on.
Des amandes.
Adele, come on.
They sit in the window seat.
Oh, there's a picture.
Partially obscured by a screen, the guests start arriving from the opposite side of the room.
Look alike, move alike, sound alike. You are, if I may say so, a particularly fine example of the split female embryo. I hope you'll permit me to ask you some questions.
Of course.
everybody is.
Yes, that's right. Everyone is interested in us.
Lady Ingram, we don't escape our arguments so easily.
Oh, Rochester, I don't understand you. If some people are rich and some poor, then that is God's will. So be it, I am satisfied.
Well, I'm sure you are if you're one of the predetermined rich.
And it's a scientific fact that there are some poor who are poor.
All this nonsense about...
Adele, sit down, Adele.
...revolutions. Can't we talk about something else? There are children and servants present.
Adele starts dancing.
Oh, good Lord. What on earth is this?
It is Mr. Rochester's ward, I suppose. The little French girl.
Mr. Rochester, I thought you were not fond of children.
I'm not.
Then what on earth made you take on that little doll? Where did you pick her up?
I didn't pick her up. She was left in my hands.
Well, you should have sent her to school where she belongs.
Our schools are expensive.
But you have a governess, I see. There, hiding behind the screen. Now that's expensive, for you have to feed them both.
What are you talking about now, Rochester?
Oh, no. We don't want Mother getting started on governesses.
We're talking of governesses, Lady Ingram.
Oh, don't mention them. I'm so glad that Blanche and Mary have no longer any need for them. Governesses are a nuisance, all of them. If they're not eating you out of house and home, they're carrying on with a tutor, or even worse, making eyes at the master of the house.
Really? You surprise me.
Mary, do you remember Miss Twisk, or Twit, or whatever she was called? We pretended she was harbouring a passion for Bradstock.
It was your idea.
Yes, we were very naughty. She was so boring, poor thing. Mother had her leave instantly in case she should set us a bad moral example.
You cannot be too careful, Rochester, with a young, impressionable mind in the house.
As Adele mingles with the party guests, Jane stops in the corridor and lets out a heavy sigh.
How do you do, Jane?
Rochester is behind her.
I'm very well, sir.
Why did you not come up and speak to me?
I did not wish to disturb you. You seemed engaged, sir.
It's a while since we've seen each other. What have you been doing?
Nothing in particular. You're teaching Adele, of course.
You look a good deal paler. What's the matter?
Nothing at all, sir.
Then return to the drawing room.
I'm tired, sir.
A little depressed, I think. What about? Tell me.
I'm not depressed.
I tell you that you are. So depressed that you're almost... Let me look at you. You're about to cry. Tell me, Jane. Why are you crying?
She shakes her head.
I'm not crying.
Tonight you're excused, but I expect you to appear in the drawing room every evening after dinner. Every evening, mind. It is my wish.
Jane slowly turns and hurries down the stairs. Now it's a gloomy morning and the guests are sitting around in the drawing room. Jane walks past Rochester.
Miss Eyre, why are you not dressed for riding?
I do not ride, sir.
Well, then you must learn. Come, join us by the fire.
We will not be able to hunt today, I'm afraid, with the weather so changeable.
No, I'll go on a walk. And my book has gone missing again. My book, you know, The Beast Within.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't, my dear. How do you dare read those novels?
Oh, but it's very exciting. It is about a man who commits a crime. He spends the dark hours raging about like an animal. And then, in the morning, he goes about his business. And no one suspects a thing.
Nonsense!
You don't think it possible that someone who seems perfectly serene and unspectacular from the outside could be capable of committing horrific crimes?
Certainly not a Christian man. Although I'm sure that Mr. Eshton has all sorts of new ideas about that.
For once, I must admit ignorance. The brain is a vast and wonderful landscape. We've not even begun to navigate its mysteries.
We do not know why it malfunctions. We are in the very infancy of its science.
Science again. You make it all sound so very grand. God gives people good blood and bad blood, and there's an end to it.
When Mary and I were in Paris, we went to see the savage boy. The one who had lived all his life in the woods and could only talk a little gibberish.
If you could call it talked. Well, that's what I'm talking about. That child had bad blood. You can clean it, dress it up, but you will never make it good.
You were born bad, Jane Eyre, and you will die bad.
Miss Earth, is it your opinion that children are born the way God intended them to be, that bad blood will always be bad blood? Or can you discipline such a child?
Excuse me? Of course you should. That's common sense. I think it wise that, since we must live with the adult, I think it prudent to treat a child as if they had feelings.
Really? Feelings? Child has no more feelings than that dog over there.
I would have thought that if you...
She's silenced by Lady Ingram's glare.
Please, Miss Eyre, continue. Mr. Eshton wishes to hear your opinion.
I think that all children, whether they are thought to be of good blood or bad blood, deserve to be given the chance to love and to be loved. I do not see the use of punishing a child with beatings and harsh words.
What's the use of punishment from a governess? You must send that child off to school immediately, Rogers.
All this talk of tainted blood is wearisome. I know my blood's up. You're the best horsewoman in the county. Shall we ride?
He takes Blanche's hand. Now Jane and Adele are watching them ride off across the estate. With ease, Blanche makes her horse jump over a tree trunk.
Oh, again.
Later, Jane walks down the stairs by the light of a lantern.
Jane, where are you going?
I have to speak to Mrs. Fairfax. She allows Adele to eat too many sugary things. Afterwards, I'll join you in the drawing room.
You might even enjoy yourself. We'll be playing games later. Don't tell me you don't approve of games, Jane.
Rochester takes several slow, considered paces towards her.
What do you think of Miss Ingram, Jane? I suppose I must choose a bride, as all about me seem to wish it. Is that what they're saying? To preserve this great estate of mine, I must have an heir. Is that what the gossip requires?
I know nothing of gossip, sir.
Well then, Jane, your honest opinion. Do you think Miss Ingram a good choice? Do you think I'm in love with Miss Ingram, Jane?
I know nothing of love, sir.
Don't be late, Jane. Won't be long before the games begin.
In the drawing room.
Shall we go?
Oh, my favourite is. There is my book, The Beast Within. I'm sitting there all the time. No, but I'm sure I looked there this morning.
Maybe the goose took it.
The ghost?
The goose. Sophie says it walks the corridors at night. It is the ghetto from the kitchen, and it laughs in the dark.
A ghost at Thornfield. How exciting. You never mentioned it.
She walks in the corridor with the painting of the mad people. Sophie says she goes cold and shivers when...
Sophie is from Marseille, which means that she wears three or four outer garments even in July. Our English weather feeds her overactive French imagination.
Oh, you disappoint me. Maybe we could tell each other ghostly stories. I'm in need of a little danger.
Ghost stories are not of interest. How do you know if they're true? But, my dear Blanche, if the ladies are interested, I know a game. If you're not afraid of things that we might not be able to explain.
supernatural.
What are you up to, Edward?
You're interested in experiments, aren't you?
Well, I hope you know what you're doing.
Later, the guests are standing around a table, each with a finger placed on an upturned glass. Around the edge are a set of cards, each displaying a different letter of the alphabet.
Al.
V.
E. Love.
Who's next? Blanche? You ready?
Of course I am.
The glass moves again.
H-E-A-R-T. Heart. Oh, Blanche. It means that you have given your heart to someone.
Do tell us. As if we didn't know.
The glass starts to move again.
Less heart. What can that be? Less heart. Heartless. Oh, heartless. Oh, dear Blanche. No, I'm sure it's made a mistake. It must think you're someone else.
You're right, Mr. Ashton. This is a silly game. I'm rather tired. I think I shall read in bed.
Be careful of your candle, my darling.
Blanche leaves, and Rochester sits back in his chair with a faraway look in his eye. In the morning, Jane's walking along a cold grey corridor. She comes to the Market Square painting and looks at the tortured faces of the mad people. As she becomes lost in the painting, Grace walks up behind her.
Come on in.
You don't think it possible that someone who seems perfectly serene and unspectacular from the outside could hide a beast within them?
Rochester is leaving the house.
I'll be away all day on business. I'm sure you'll be able to amuse yourself.
Don't be too late.
We'll be back by sundown. Don't misbehave now. Quiet!
He rides off and the dog scampers after him. Jane's trying to get Adele to study.
I think that gown Miss Blanche Ingram has, de bleu. I think it's the most beautiful dress I have ever seen. It is Monsieur Rochester. He is back. You said we could finish.
Good.
Oh, who is this?
Another man.
He is très bon, mademoiselle, n'est-ce pas?
A foreigner, I think. Although quite a nice chap. Mason's the name. Says he met Rochester in the West Indies. So I think the twins have taken a bit of a shine to him.
Speak up, man. What's the matter?
It's an old gypsy lady, madam, come to tell fortunes. She refuses to leave, and with the master away...
Tell her to go, or we'll set the dogs on her.
No, tell her to stay. There are ladies present who wish to have their fortunes told.
But what would Rochester say?
Well, he's not here, is he? I'm brave enough if you aren't.
The curtains open on a small puppet theatre and the twins clap excitedly. Adele gets ready to perform.
Oh. Bonjour!
Hello!
In the background, Jane looks on and smiles. Blanche comes into the room looking ill at ease.
Bonjour, mon chéri.
Blanche, what happened? What did the gypsy lady say to you?
Rochester was right. She talked absolute nonsense, nothing in it. You can amuse yourselves with her if you want.
Yes.
George to Jane.
I'm sorry, miss. She said she wouldn't leave until she had seen everyone. And you're the only one who hasn't had her fortune told. She would not leave until I had brought you here.
That's all right, George, don't worry.
I'll wait outside in case there's trouble.
No, George. You may go, I'm not frightened.
Jane goes into the dimly lit study. She closes the door behind her and turns to the elderly gypsy woman who offers her a chair. Jane steps towards her, then calmly takes a seat.
You're not afraid?
Of course not. Do you wish me harm?
The others were afraid of my magic, of my dark arts, of what I knew, of their worst thoughts and desires. Surely you noticed that some who entered this room with confidence are now disappointed at what I've revealed. Do you not believe in hell and the supernatural, Miss Eyre?
I believe what I believe.
You're a very confident young woman for someone who's never loved, who has only had one true friend, who was snatched away prematurely. Where was it? Lowood School. There now, I've impressed you.
These matters are not generally known for sure, but they are facts. They are the truth. You may have found them out by mortal means.
Well said, Miss Eyre. I can see I'm going to have to prove my powers. To see into your soul. To reveal a hidden secret that no one else could possibly know.
The old lady holds out her palm. When Jane tries to give her a coin, the gypsy clutches her hand.
What were your thoughts? For instance, when you came to me this evening. It's very pleasant company, is it not? Such as you've never known. And after the long months here alone at Thornfield with only the child and the housekeeper. What do you think of them?
I do not think of them.
Of their opinions and their tastes.
I do not care for theirs any more than I'm sure they care for mine.
Is there no one in the company who you share feelings with? What about the master of the house?
He is not here today.
He is soon to be married, is he not? To the beautiful Blanche Ingram.
I don't know. I thought it was you that could predict the future. Anyway, I've paid you for my future, not Mr. Rochester's.
Oh, Mr. Rochester is to be married. I know that for sure. Everyone does.
Jane snatches back her hand.
Oh, I see that this news affects you.
You talk nonsense, old lady. I shall leave you now and send in the next fool.
It is over. What do you wish me to do?
What is it? Who is there? Show yourself immediately or I'll call a servant.
It's Rochester.
Sir.
Thank you. You've done well today. You've given me a deal to think about and amused me greatly.
After handing the gypsy some money, Rochester lets her out. He turns back to Jane and swallows a laugh.
Now, Jane, don't be too cross.
I'm not angry, I'm surprised.
Oh, surely you don't begrudge me this little diversion. The old lady provided me with an afternoon's amusement and our guests were given a mirror to hold up to themselves. Not undeservedly, surely.
They are your guests, sir, not mine. But I believe you got that woman in to talk nonsense to me so that I might talk nonsense back, and that was not fair, sir.
No. No, it was not fair. But how else am I to find out what you think, Jane? But don't worry, you didn't talk nonsense, so all's well, isn't it? And you're not angry with me?
I don't know. I have to think about it. But I expect I'll manage to forgive you eventually.
Aren't you curious to find out what my gypsy predicted for Miss Ingram? I bet the drawing room's buzzing with excitement.
They have plenty to discuss, sir. Even the stranger arrived this morning.
What stranger?
No, his name is Mason. I believe he's visiting from overseas. What is it, sir?
Oh, Jane. I wish I were on a desert island somewhere. With only you for company. Tell me. If all those people in the drawing room, if they cast me out and spat at me, what would you do?
I should try to comfort you, sir. Can I help you, sir? I'd do anything for you.
What if I asked you to do something for me that was wrong? I know the answer, Jane. You could not. Thank you.
She starts to walk away.
Jane. Do you believe in redemption?
If you have sinned, you can be redeemed.
When Jane goes, Rochester looks haunted. Now Jane catches Mason's eye across the drawing room, where Eshton's chatting with the twins.
Do you mind if I ask some questions about your habits? How about your clothes? Did you come down this morning and find that you had dressed the same?
Yes!
Mason, my dear fellow. What a surprise. How good to see you again.
It's night time. Jane wanders along a corridor and comes face to face with an eerie Grace Poole and a young girl. She wakes with a start. She sits up. Hearing the noises in the corridor, she shuffles out of bed.
What was it? Did you hear it?
Really, I only go away for a day on business, and you overexcite yourselves like children with your occult games and conversations.
But we all heard a cry. Didn't we, Lady Lynn?
Yes.
Surely we all heard something.
Someone had a bad dream. Brought on by a combination of the visit from our gypsy friend and too much grouse at dinner.
Are you sure? We're all safe.
I am sure. Anyway, my Amazon, what have you to fear from the night hours?
Bad enough having strange shrieking, never mind governesses creeping up on us. She's pale as a ghost.
Well, my lady, I shall escort you back to your room personally. Come, everyone, back to bed.
Jane has been the only one to notice that Rochester's hand is dripping with blood. After the others have gone, she looks down at the small puddle that's formed and quickly mops it up. A little later, Jane's sitting on her bed, fully dressed.
I'm ready.
It's Rochester.
Are you hurt, sir?
It's nothing. Come, we must be silent.
By candlelight, Rochester leads Jane through the dark corridors. He keeps a brisk pace, a stride or so in front of her.
Are we going to the North Tower?
Do you want to go back?
No, sir.
He takes her hand and leads her onwards. They arrive at a doorway and he unbolts two large locks. They go inside and wind their way up a spiral staircase. They make their way further and further up into the North Tower.
I forgot to ask, do you faint at the sight of blood?
I don't know.
Wait here.
He passes her the candle, then continues up the stairs alone. She looks frightened and on the verge of tears. Rochester reappears and takes Jane's hand. He leads her to another door, which she also has to unbolt. They step into a wood-paneled room where Mason is lying covered in blood on a daybed.
Richard.
Rochester picks up a handful of bandages.
Jane, come here. You must press this hard wound.
She presses the bandages against Mason's chest.
I'm going now to get the doctor. He'll have you good as new by morning. Richard, do not say anything of what has happened or anything responsible. Jane, I have to leave you here. But I'm gone for an hour or so. No conversation.
Before leaving, Rochester pauses to look at the door to an adjoining room. Some time later, it's still dark outside. Jane strokes Mason's hair and he starts to stir.
I could not stop her.
Shh. Be calm.
She has killed.
The door handle to the adjoining room starts to rattle violently, and a gust of wind blows through the window and extinguishes the candle.
You will not die. I will not let you die.
By morning, Jane is still at Mason's side, pressing the bandage against his chest. She appears anxious when she hears footsteps, but relaxes when Rochester enters the room with the doctor. The doctor kneels at Mason's bedside.
She's done for me. Nonsense. The doctor's here. You're in no danger.
The doctor removes the bandage on Mason's chest.
There are teeth marks here. She sucked my blood. She said she would drain my heart. I warned you. I told you not to do anything until I could be with you. Hurry up, Carter. We need him out of here before sunrise.
A little later, a carriage is waiting outside. Jane checks that no one is watching. Then Rochester helps Mason out. After easing him into the carriage, he turns to address the doctor.
Take care of him at your house. We'll head over in a day or two, see how he does.
Very well.
Edward, take care of her as tenderly as you can. I'll do my best. As I always have and always will.
The carriage pulls away and disappears under an archway, leaving Rochester and Jane alone in the courtyard.
Stay a while outside with me.
This house is a dungeon.
It's a prison.
As he trudges away, she falls into step with him. They turn into the gardens.
It's a lovely morning. After such a turbulent night, hey, Jane?
Yes, sir.
Were you frightened?
I was afraid, sir.
Quietly, go in the back entrance.
Now, Jane is correcting some work in an exercise book. She wipes her eyes wearily, trying to remain focused on her work. Suddenly, she becomes aware of Grace standing at her side.
Everything all right, miss?
What do you want?
Mrs. Fairfax asked me to tell you you have a visitor.
Jane heads downstairs into the hall.
Oh, excuse me, miss. It is you, Miss Jane. Don't you recognise me? Bessie. Oh, look at you. Miss Eyre. I always said Jane Eyre would grow up to be a fine, accomplished young lady. Not quite a beauty, all told, but a credit to us. I'm glad not to be of discredit to you, Bessie.
Bessie's near tears.
Oh, Bessie, what's happened?
Blanche.
And I'm hoping you're not going to disappear once more on your travels. Mm.
I suppose you might like to travel yourself one day.
Does Miss Eyre need to speak to you?
Excuse me.
Blanche looks uncomfortable as Rochester goes to Jane.
Well, Jane?
Sir, I need to have a leave of absence for a week or two to see a sick lady who's asked for me.
What sick lady?
Her name is Reed. She is my uncle's wife.
Uncle? You told me you had no family.
My aunt cast me off when I went to school.
Why?
Because I was poor. And she did not like me.
And she sent you to Lowood without so much as a word or a visit in nearly 10 years. So why does she suddenly wish to see you now?
Her son John is dead. He ruined himself. She is now struck down with this misfortune. I'll only be gone 2 weeks, I hope.
2 weeks? That's not possible.
And you have company, sir.
Very well. But promise me that you will not stay with this undeserving aunt more than a week.
I cannot promise. She is dying. I cannot set a time on that.
Of course you will go. How about the power to stop you? We must have some money. Can't travel without money. I won't give you any salary yet, remember? How much have you, Jane? In all the world?
She reaches for her purse and tips out some coins.
5 shillings, sir.
Here, take £50.
No, sir. You only owe me 15. I have no change.
I don't want change, Jane. You know that. Take your wages. You're right. Better not give you all that. I might stay away for 3 months. Here. There's 10. Well, isn't that enough?
Yes, sir. But you still owe me 5.
Then come back for it.
Sir, I have to ask you something else, a matter of business. You have as good as said you intend to be married.
Really? That's been settled then, has it? You've decided that Miss Ingram is to be my bride. Now I see it. You're going to prevail upon this miserable family to find you a new situation, ungrateful girl. Admit it.
No, sir, I told you they do not like me, sir. To offer such a service, I shall advertise.
Devil you will! Advertise. I wish I'd only offered you a sovereign, not 10 whole pounds. Give me back 9. Jane, I have need of it.
No, sir. I do not trust you.
When she walks out, he follows her.
So, Jane. Etiquette. How do we say goodbye? Teach me. I'm not quite up to it.
We say farewell. Or anything else we might prefer. Farewell, Mr. Rochester. For the present.
And what must I say in return?
The same, if you like.
He holds out his hand and clasps hers firmly.
And I will say, don't go, Jane. What will I do without your help?
Sir, you'll not be in danger.
Rochester! Edward!
Sir, please.
He ignores her plea and, without looking back, returns to the drawing room. Now she's outside, climbing into a waiting coach.
Come along.
The four horses pull the coach away, and Jane looks back at the house through the window. She looks out the opposite window and smiles when she sees Rochester on his horse. But her face falls when he's joined by Blanche, also on horseback. As they gallop away together, Jane looks away. Meanwhile, up in the North Tower, an unseen figure peers out and watches the coach as it rolls down the drive.